Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, hello, welcome to the Near and Queer to My Heart podcast. I am your host, Amanda G. Happy Pride, y'all. So excited to be here bringing you this episode. Told you we bring it for Pride season, and here we are. We have Mary Jacobs on the show. I'm so excited for this. One of the cool things about doing this podcast is I get to know people that I've known for years in a different way. I've known Mary for years. She's done Greetings from Queer Mountain. I've seen her perform all over town. She's seen me perform. We've hung out together. But the questions I get to ask on the podcast aren't really like the kind of questions you ask over cocktails. So it's just so cool to get to know her in this different, cool way. The other thing about this episode I'm excited about is I'm going to call it our Gilmore Girls episode. Definitely the California girl came out in me. I call it the Gilmore Girls episode because Gilmore Girls, on average, talked twice as fast as other TV shows did. And that's what happens here. We get through so much, we cover it so much, we're back and forth, boom, boom, boom. Just because we had so much to say and we were vibing and it was great and it was so much fun. Let's get to it. Let's get to Mary Jacobs, y'all.
Mary Jacobs, I have been wanting to interview for so long and I feel like I'm just intimidated by you. And that's why I was like, I don't want to bother her.
Like, people always tell me this. I am told that, like, people won't talk to me. People think I hate them. People are intimidated by me. It's because I'm a Leo, I think.
Is that what Leos do?
I'm like a triple Leo or quadruple Leo. I have a Leo sun and moon. I'm just really sure, and I think that's scary.
Yeah. I'm like, she has something better to do.
Oh my God.
And I messaged you and you were like, when can you come over? And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, of course. I love fun stuff. I love talking. I love, you know me.
Yeah.
Give me a microphone.
I've known you in the comedy world through stand up, through the Greetings from Queer Mountain storytelling show, from just being gay in the same freaking city, knowing the same people. But yeah, I'm really excited to be talking with you. And you're from New Orleans?
I am from New Orleans. You're currently on the property I was raised on.
Oh my God.
Yeah, my whole family lives here.
Well, let's put a pin in that.
Yeah, I know.
So you actually like your family.
Yes.
We all coexist.
Yes, we do well. Enough to be able to share a space. I think it's as complicated as any other family. There's just a lot of codependency here.
Yeah, because my mom's in Florida, my brother is in California, and my dad is in Pennsylvania.
Whoa.
So that is, I'm like, y'all are in the same, not only the same city, you're like, we're in the same vicinity.
Oh, we're in the same vicinity. We have a joke about my sister and how she got off the compound, but she just moved 5 blocks away.
But she got away.
Yeah, she's literally 5 blocks. It's wild. It's like me, my brother and his family, and my parents. Me and my partner. And yeah. My parents are in the house I was raised in, and all the houses are kind of connected by backyards.
Okay, so you see your family a lot?
Almost every day. I mean, pretty much every day.
They know everything that's going on?
No, they don't. It's interesting that you say that. They really don't, unless I, like, give them everything. They're not, like, they don't ask questions.
Yeah. My mom would show up, be like, what's for dinner?
Oh, no. But I do, you know, I do go shopping over there a lot. Like, today I wanted nachos, and I was missing the key ingredient, the chips. And so I went to my mom's, and there before me was an unopened bag of tortilla chips. And I was like, well, I'm so glad the store had them in stock.
I love how you just had cheese and you're like, I want nachos.
I had every other ingredient. I had sour cream, cheese, beans, meat, taco seasoning and salsa.
Oh, you were making like a nacho supreme.
I made some real good nachos. Okay, they were delicious. But yeah, I didn't have chips, so.
Well, let's thank Mom and Dad's General Store.
Thanks, Mom.
What's it? So I know like a lot of people I talk to that live in New Orleans now, including myself, I don't like the word transplant because I feel like at a certain point, like I should count. Like my mom's, though, you know, I was raised in California and she's always like, why does my daughter say y'all? And I was like, well, because I live in New Orleans and I've been here for 14 years and like I should get some street cred for that. But you're from here. Like, what was it like growing up in New Orleans? Like, it was, I mean, it must have been so different. I know now in New Orleans, yeah, has a lot of gentrification.
Yeah, growing up, you didn't know about any of that. You know what's interesting is when I left for Katrina, I had a really good taste of how different my life was, because in New Orleans, I was like the cool kid at school. But in the country where I evacuated to and went to a Catholic school out there, I was the weird, extravagant, over the top, strange girl. Do you know, like vegetarian, like, but in New Orleans, in a city where we like pride ourselves in the most interesting people and the most like fun people. I'm calling myself interesting and fun. I realize that makes me sound so vain, but I did open saying I was a quadruple Leo. So I feel like,
yeah, it's also New Orleans. Like, I think like a regular person in New Orleans is like what everyone else is like. Oh, that's so, like Austin's always like, keep Austin weird. And yeah, I'm like, why did Austin get that? Like, I don't know. New Orleans should freaking have that.
Yeah,
like,
I think about that. Literally, I thought about that this week. It's so funny you say that. Yeah, it's so weird. You know, when I went to Austin, I saw a man with a lizard on his shoulder and he was just standing on the street cold. And I was like, is this what they mean? Is this what they think is weird? Anyway, I learned really quickly that what was good for me growing up here is that I think somewhere else I would have turned out much differently and maybe been bullied or felt like a weirdo. But like here, I was like cool and fun and I found my people so fast because there's more people here, you know. I got really lucky really young to like find my people and find myself and just run with it.
So you got to like be you and not, yeah, like for me, like when I got to college, a lot of things that I was really into that in high school I would have never talked about. Like,
right.
I would have never admitted to, like, I really like pop music in a non-ironic, like,
yeah.
But where I went to high school, it was all about the emo shit. Oh, and, you know, the like Nirvana, whatever, the grunge.
Right. You're stuff. Like trying to fit in these little and big ways.
Yeah. And it's like, that's not me. Yeah. Like even like my bat mitzvah, right? My theme was music. Uh-huh. And every table was going to have a different musician, uh-huh, on it. And I remember having like Nirvana and Soundgarden and these groups that I didn't listen to.
That's so funny.
But I knew my friends were gonna show up and I'm fucking 13.
Do you want to know what I did for my sweet 16?
What'd you do?
I got the local ska band to play at my favorite venue and I threw a ska show and invited all of my friends.
Were you into ska?
I was such a ska kid. Okay. New Orleans used to have a poppin' ska punk scene and that was what I grew up in, and I spent every weekend going like the VFW hall. There used to be a place called Big Top, where I have a lot of history, and I threw my sweet 16 at the Big Top, including I also threw the first play I ever produced at the Big Top. My band also played there.
Oh, you were in a band?
I was in a band. The Big Top was like the best venue. It was like an indie art gallery. Why was I saying this? Oh, because I had my sweet 16, yeah, at a ska band. Your music theme made me think of it, but bat mitzvah is 13.
Yeah, so yeah, that's also at that age. You're like in junior high.
You don't know yourself at 13.
And you're just trying to fit in. And I was raised in like a non-Jewish area and I already have a bat mitzvah and everyone's like, what the fuck's a bat mitzvah? And then I'm like, come to this thing. And if it was really like Mariah Carey and Celine Dion and Shania Twain,
that would have been your vibe.
Like, then the people that I wanted, that would have been my vibe. I don't think I would have been too, like, I think I would have just gotten made fun of, and I was so scared of that. I didn't want to.
No. All the gay men would have found your bat mitzvah. That's what it would have happened. Mariah Carey. Who else did you say? You didn't say Cher.
Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
I would have put Cher in there too.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
I said Shania Twain.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yes.
I dabble in a little pop country.
Kristen lives for pop music. She also, like, she knows, like, what every star is, who they're married to.
Oh, okay.
She knows hits. She knows album names. She can tell you, like, sometimes the years things came out. Big pop music fan.
Okay, I gotta talk to Kristen.
Y'all could vibe. Yeah,
we would talk like all night, and everyone would be like, "What the fuck are they saying?" And we would be like, "Don't worry about it."
She would love that.
But I think that's what's cool about New Orleans is like from a young age, it's like you want to wear a costume today, wear a costume today. It's not Halloween. It's not Mardi Gras. Just do you, and nobody's like, "What's wrong with her?"
Yeah. You definitely grow up with just like more variety. And when you see more variety, you just take part in variety. It's not unusual, you know? I think that's why people are so attracted to it here, because it's freewheeling. It's like, yeah, be yourself. Be yourself.
That's our motto. We're not like keep a New Orleans weird. We're like, just be who the fuck you are.
Yeah, whatever that is.
And don't be a dick.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Because if you are a dick, don't be that.
Don't be a dick. Be nicer, leave. Yeah. Haven't you heard? That's our number one rule in this city.
Yeah. Was Katrina the first time you like moved away from New Orleans?
Yeah.
And well, I want to say like moved away, like.
Yeah, no, I was away, but not very long. So I evacuated just like anyone else. And I had kind of a culture shock because I was in the country. Like
where?
My mom grew up in Convent. So her family still had a house there. So we kind of all crammed into a small house and got a FEMA trailer, which was about an hour away from here. But it was like Assumption Parish, that area.
Okay.
So real Cajun-y vibes. And yeah, that was the first time I like went somewhere and was like, oh, this is weird. Like there are other places that like are a lot cool that I don't want to live. And I like very quickly knew that I wanted to come back to New Orleans, and that was the whole thing. And I even wound up living with a friend for a while my sophomore year, like to move back to New Orleans as soon as my school reopened. Like I was there the day they opened the doors after Katrina because I was able to live with a friend on the West Bank. So I was like living with a friend and her family when I was 16
and commuting.
Yeah, and commuting. And so I went from living in the country for a couple of months then to living with a friend and her family, and then eventually like living in like three different houses before, but being in New Orleans that whole time. So I was only away from New Orleans for a short time, but I definitely like got a real quick study in like how special this place was. And everyone was talking about it, too. Like, that was, like, in the air. Everyone was so aware. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? Like, it was everywhere, you know? Like, there was poems and jewelry and T-shirts. And it's, like, everyone was losing their mind over how great New Orleans is and how important it was to rebuild. And so I was, like, I was talking about this with my friend Dawn the other day on my podcast, Planet NOLA.
We will talk about that.
Season 2 coming out, first episode. Anyway, I was talking to Dawn about this, and basically she was like, yeah, that's when we all got really, really bonded, and we were all like, oh, yeah, this is the only place for me.
Okay, so you were in high school when Katrina happened.
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school, so.
God.
I know, brutal, brutal.
I was in my first year of law school, and it was my first semester, and I was in New York, and I'm just like, I just remember like watching, you know, and especially like the news portrayal of it at the time. Yeah. Versus like later, you know, all the stuff we learned. Like, I just couldn't imagine being in high school and not knowing if you could even like come back home or what your home looked like or what New Orleans was going to look like. Like, they didn't know if New Orleans was going to rebuild, if Mardi Gras was going to happen again. Like,
they didn't know anything. And there was just no information. But I remember one time hearing, like, in the weeks right afterwards, someone said, it's going to take 10 years for New Orleans to completely come back. And I remember hearing that number and being like, how in the fuck is it going to take 10 years? And I remember being like just completely gutted when I heard that number. And it really did take 10 years for, I mean, it's still, there's still empty lots everywhere. Mm-hmm. And like, I still see things and think of Katrina for me. Like when I see an empty lot, like this lot next to this house and the lot next to my parents' house, I think of Katrina because there should be a house there. And a lot of these lots were absorbed through programs after Katrina, which is beautiful. It was called the Lot Next Door Program, where a lot of people were able to buy the lots next to their houses, you know, for mad cheap, which was really beautiful. But for me, every time I see an empty lot, I think, oh, yeah, that was where a house was. That's where like a family was raised. This got really dark really fast.
It's, yeah, I mean,
I swear I'm a comedian. I don't know why we're talking about Katrina. Let's change the subject.
You know, comedians are dark. Like, that's part
true,
of it.
That's true.
Like, everyone's like, oh, you're so funny. And it's like, because there's this other side of us that's fucking dark as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't come out that often. And
right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's okay.
It gives you wisdom.
Yeah.
My trauma has made me very wise.
Yeah. And it has probably made you very funny.
Yes, I hope so.
Like, you seem like the way my family deals with trauma is we kind of laugh about it and joke about it. And I've always been that way. And I think you seem like that kind of person too.
Yeah, I definitely try to laugh through it, but I really sit in my feelings, which I think is a good thing too. Like, to really feel like the full scope of it.
That's healthy.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good. It gives me like a good grip. Well, sometimes it's awful and you just don't want to feel it. And that's what disassociation is for. Yeah, can we skip ahead? No more Katrina.
Okay. We'll skip ahead. No more Katrina. So high school, get through high school here.
Yeah.
Do you leave after high school?
Oh,
do
yeah.
Do you stick around? Okay, where do you go?
Oh, yeah, baby. I got a full ride to my college. It's this random tiny school in Pennsylvania called Cabrini College. I went to Cabrini here, and the Cabrini College offers one full ride to a Cabrini High School student each year. So my year I got it, which was awesome.
Nice.
And my whole thing was like, I wanted to go to college, but like, I didn't want to pay for it. And I knew like my parents weren't going to pay for it. So I was like, well, if I go, it's because I have a full ride. And I really wanted to stay in New Orleans. A lot of me wanted to stay. Loyola gave me their highest theater scholarship, but it's still not even close to what I would have been still paying every year. I would still be in debt right now if I had gone to Loyola, you know? So I went to Pennsylvania. And
where, like Western, Eastern?
Right side of Philly.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was in like Radnor Wayne area, like nearest to Villanova. But yeah, I went there and that was also an awakening. It kind of reminded me of after Katrina when I went to that school in the middle of nowhere, because my school was full of like Jersey kids, which are like the equivalent of like kids in the country that hunt and do boring things. Like Jersey kids are their own version of that, whereas like they've got like a built-in culture, but it's kind of boring, you know? Like,
yeah, it's just about makeup and getting fucked up.
Yeah, it's like
I've been to Jersey.
Yeah. And it's like it's very vain and like hegemonic, very like white, and it reminds me a lot of like the country kids, but it's like its own thing. No offense, I have friends from Jersey, but that vibe of like mass, oh, I don't know, like it's just sad, like mass unoriginality.
Yeah, you can talk shit about everywhere. Like, I'm from Los Angeles. Every time I tell people I'm from LA, they're like, they're assholes. They're so vain. All you care about is brands and this and that. I'm like, yeah, I know, but that's still where I'm from.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I've been to Jersey and had a lot of good times. I have family from Jersey.
Listen, I'll talk shit in New Orleans. I'll talk shit about New Orleans. People from New Orleans get really stuck in their ways. Most of them drink way too fucking much in not a cute way, but we pretend like it's a cute way. And we're real comfortable and we don't really go outside of our comfort zones much. So that's my shit talking in New Orleans. Nobody else can say that. Unless they're from here.
Yeah, we're all like, we're supporting local businesses. We just like to drink at 3 p.m.
Yeah, they're just all bars. Every local business we love is a bar or a restaurant.
Yeah.
We're gluttons. We're literally gluttons, and we're so proud of it.
I know, because it's our culture, baby.
I ate so many nachos before this, I gave myself a bellyache.
All right, so were you doing theater there?
You know, it's so funny. My school didn't have a theater program. That was the biggest compromise. But I worked in theater and I did mass comm and English. I minored in English with like a focus in women's lit and women's and gender studies, which was kind of like a new focus. Gender and body studies, which was like kind of a new focus for my college. I was like one of the first classes that really worked all these new classes. And that's why I have like this real big passion about, you know, fighting the fucking patriarchy and beauty culture and diet culture and all that stuff. That's part of my vibe. And I think I got that in college. So I was really grateful for my professors. All my friends in college were just my teachers. Such a fucking nerd. I just didn't have that many friends because it was such an obscure school, you know? But it allowed me to travel in the Northeast a lot. So I got to spend like, I was like spending like probably one weekend a month or two weekends a month outside of Philly, like in New York, in Boston, in Connecticut. I had friends in all those places. I would go down to Virginia for shows, like, because I was still a little punk kid. So I was like just going up and down. So it gave me a lot of culture in the sense that like I got to see a lot of the Northeast and way more of the world than I had ever seen before. So
yeah, which is, that's awesome.
It was so cool. You know, you forget in New Orleans, like the nearest city that's cool is like Austin or Memphis, and that's far.
Yeah, Memphis is 6-ish hours. Austin's 8.5. I just went to Austin. That's 8.5
far,
hours.
But in Philly, 2 hours to New York, 2 hours to Philly, 2 hours to DC, you can get to so many big cities, like bam, bam, bam.
And you can take a train. Like,
yes, public transit.
Like, there's no train I'm taking to Austin, really. Like, I drove that.
Yeah, and that sucks. Because I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it before, but it's not like a regular trip. I would go to New York at least once a month when I was in college.
Yeah.
If I could afford it, I would just go and go do like one of the student rushes to go see a show on Broadway or something, mm-hmm. or like stay with someone if I had a friend that was living in the city at the time. It was the best.
Were you like in high school? I know you said you were in a band and I want to talk about that. Like, did you do like theater or comedy or like any other performance?
Yeah, so I did theater from when I was about 10 on, and my theater teachers, I had the same theater training group from that age until I graduated high school, because they had a theater school and they also taught drama at my school. So I was taking theater classes and I was doing drama with like the same family, and they used improv. That was our training tool. Like whenever we had nothing to do, it was like we would play an improv game. And so my favorite thing about theater was improv games in the rehearsal process. I loved the rehearsal process and I loved improv, and it was so evident to me. Like, I was like, this is the best part of all of this, you know? Like, I love theater to this day. I'll go see any show anytime, you know?
Yeah, but you just did the warm up and then you're like, I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Yeah, it was so fun. And I didn't realize it was a thing you could do just on its own until much later, you know? But yeah, that was my like real first dabbling into comedy. And also I was nominated for Class Clown as my senior superlative, and I lost to Sarah Wright, who laughs at all her own jokes. If you're listening to this, Sarah, which you might be, I still think I should have got it.
Yeah, what's Sarah done now?
Not comedy. But you know what I did get? I got Most Likely to Be Famous.
Okay. So I think I'd rather have that.
Yeah, it's pretty dope. I'm not complaining. I am complaining.
I was like, it sounded like a complaint.
Mostly, I just wanted to riff on Sarah Wright, who I haven't seen in like 8 years. Also a lesbian.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. Sarah, you're a lesbian, right?
So you went to an all-girls school, and you're telling us the rumors are true.
The baby. That is so right. I went to an all-girls school. Hell yeah. Did you go to an all-girls school?
I did not. I would have had a panic attack if I did. I didn't come out till I was 23. I was not ready for, I was not ready for whatever that was.
Oh wait, did it sound like me and Sarah Wright hooked up? We didn't hook up. She's just got dyke energy, you know? Yeah. Big dyke energy.
Which is a compliment.
I mean, in my world, it's a compliment.
I think it's a huge
compliment.
Okay,
good. I'm glad we're on the same page about that.
All right, well, when you were in a band, what did you sing? Did you play an instrument? Yeah, how did that start? What was your band called? What were the multiple iterations of the name? Because my favorite part about that.
Yeah, we had one name actually. And I just picked it because it was too perfect. It was called Trashy.
Trashy.
I went through a large stint in high school and college where I just dated male musicians in punk bands and ska bands, and I broke up with the last one, and I was like, you know what, like, why am I like, do I just want to make music? Like, am I just dating all these people because I want to do what they're doing? Like, and so I was like, maybe, so let me do it. And so I started a punk band with a couple of friends, Amy Martin and Mauricio Lesage, and we recorded an album on my iPhone, and we played like probably probably 10 shows all together over the course of 2 years. But we were like on punknews.com, which is like a big website, and we were featured like pretty soon after dropping our EP, and like we toured to Austin, and we had like a huge house show, like people showed up to see us.
Oh wow.
It was nuts. It was like snap. Like as soon as we started doing it, it went really well for us. I felt like if we would have kept going, and like we all were terrible, but that was like part of it. Like we were a real garage band. We were just doing it because it was fun and we wanted to do it. I was just like screaming about rape culture. It was so fucking fun. I had such a good time. But I really quickly realized, I was like, I don't want to do this.
Oh. I was like, why'd y'all stop? Because it sounds like you were like building something kind of cool that other bands would pay money to have.
Yeah, I know. Well, doing it, I realized it's not what I wanted to do. And I was like, this is cool. And for me, it was a real ego boost because I was like, all this time I thought these men were like doing something so cool and interesting and hard, and I just did it. And I was like, yeah, not for me, actually.
And a lot of things are with dudes.
It's so real. And the same dudes that I supported for years and years in that same scene, as soon as we started doing well, rumors kept getting back to me that people were just talking about how we were blowing up because we were girls. They're being like cruel behind our back.
Yeah.
And that was when I completely dropped out of the punk scene, because I was like, you know what, like for years I've been at every show, I've promoted your shows, I've like given you guys my money, I've bought merch, I've bought CDs, I used to photograph the bands, and like I was thought I was a part of a community, and I really learned that it was just a straight insecure guys like who I don't actually belong with. So it was good for me to start the band because I got out of the band. And
yeah, because you might have still been doing that.
Yeah, and I'm so glad I'm not, because my life has gotten so much exorbitant. That's when I found improv.
And this was after college?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I started Trashy like right after I graduated college.
So you graduated in Pennsylvania and moved right back?
Not right back. Okay. I kind of came back and forth. It was weird. It's boring to explain, but I basically was back and forth for about a year and a half. So I was here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the band was here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's why we played sporadic shows. And only had one EP. It was because it was like I was living here for like 3 months at a time or whatever. So yeah.
So you decide, hey, this band thing is not my shit. What's next? Like, what happens next?
Yeah, that was when I found improv. And that was also when I started writing plays. When I moved back to New Orleans, I kind of ended my band officially with my friends.
How'd they take the news?
Well, we kind of all just fizzled out together. Okay. Like, all of us were just like, nah. Our guitar player would, like, show up to shows and not have a guitar. Like, we were that dysfunctional.
Okay, so it wasn't like, oh my God, what am I going
to
do with
every
my life?
Every show, we would have to go to Guitar Center with a different credit card and buy a bass amp, and then we'd return it after the show.
Okay.
Because they had a 30-day return window. We didn't even have like the equipment. Like, it was so DIY that it was comical, you know? So it was, no one's feelings were too hurt. But anyway, after the band, I started writing plays. I had been writing plays in college, and I had been writing like summer shows for my sister. She was doing a summer program at Mount Carmel, and she like had me write some original shows a couple of summers, and it was so fun to write shows for the girls. And I was like, I want to write plays. So in like 2015-16, I wrote two different plays, produced them in my backyard, put them up for Fringe Fest, and that was so much fun. And that was when I met Kristen around that time. She actually came to both of my shows. Even the first one she came to, we weren't even dating, and the second one she came to, we had been dating by that point.
Okay, is that how y'all met?
We met at a roller derby after party.
That sounds accurate.
So gay. We met at a roller derby after party. We kept making eye contact, and she was like leaving, and I saw her leaving because we got passing the doorway of 12-mile limit. And I look at her and I was like pretty sauced. And I go, are you leaving without talking to me? Ooh. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. And then we exchanged numbers like in the doorway, and she was like with another woman. And that was it. And then a few months later, a girl that I had gone, remember, I had just moved back at this point. And then a few months later, a girl that I had gone to high school with came to my bout to see me skate. And I was sitting next, I came up to the bleachers to sit next to my friend and thank her for coming. And she goes, oh, I want you to meet my roommate. And she taps the girl next to her, and it's Kristen.
Yes.
And that's how we met.
That's the kismet.
And we both were like, oh. And then our mutual friend goes, did you two fuck? And it was in front of Kristen's girlfriend that she said this. We were like, no, we didn't fuck.
Not then, yet.
Yeah, that's the beginning. That's the short version.
Why didn't she text you?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't text her either. We were probably both lit.
Yeah.
You know, I think I forgot. Like, I had just been drinking, you know?
Yeah. And you're like, what a cool moment.
Yeah. Isn't that so funny?
Yeah. Because I like that you had the, like, in the Jewish culture, we'll call it the chutzpah.
Yeah, the chutzpah.
To get, you know, to just say that.
Would you ever think I didn't have the chutzpah? I'm made up of only chutzpah. It's a problem.
Yeah. No, but that's pretty impressive.
I need some subtleties in my life. Yeah. Someone teach me how to be subtle.
How to be like, excuse me, man. You have not discuss things with me tonight.
Excuse me, I noticed that you were here and I am also here. Mayhaps we have a chat.
So y'all have been together. How long have you been together?
I think we started dating in 2015, technically. Okay. 2016.
And how long had you been out before then?
I never came out.
See, that's what's cool. So I'm 39, I'll age myself. And I feel like the more I talk to the younger folks, that like, and I love this. I love that it's less and less of like this big announcement or this like coming out thing that you have to do. I love that it just is like you're dating this person. And that doesn't mean you are put in this box or you have to identify this way. It's just like, you just exist. And that's like always the goal, I think.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. I think half of it was me being like, why do I have to do this? It's my life. I can just do what I want and not have to give anyone an explanation for anything, you know, as long as I stand by my choices. But also I was like, my family doesn't give a fuck. My dad doesn't even know my birthday. You know, like, I bet if you asked him right now, he'd be like, it's in August? Like, question mark?
Virgo?
Yeah, he would maybe be able to tell you. But I'm just saying, like, they don't, like, I was like, I don't feel like I owe these people anything. Because who do you come out to? Like, your family, really? Because your friends don't give a my friends didn't care who I dated. You know, they loved me no matter what. It's my family that would have to like adjust to their idea of who I am. But they don't know me at all. Like, I love them. We're very close. But they don't really know me, you know. And it didn't, especially when I started dating Kristen, it didn't feel like they really knew me. So it was like coming out to them would be like me saying to them, my favorite food is Indian food. They don't care.
Yeah. Like, they're like, okay, that's a thing we'll just keep in like, the brain, keep in the old head.
I know that's like a silly thing.
No, like I said, I think that's great because I think it shouldn't, you know, but I also, and I don't know, like how religious they are. Like a lot of times religion plays a role in that, and it's not necessarily like what the parents or the grandparents or the siblings think. It's more of a like, what will God think? And God's gonna judge you, and if they judge you, they're gonna judge me, and it becomes this whole
I wish they would tell me that and see what happens. I wish they would.
Let's that's go
the
right
thing.
Now let's
that's the other thing.
What, are I they think two doors down right now?
Yeah, let's we could just go be like, oh, how do you feel about this? That's for a totally different podcast, but yeah, that's so true. It's like, come on now, God, I don't think, if God is real, God does not give a flying fuck about who I sleep with.
Yeah, because I'm like, okay, but if you bang a dude like that, somehow God has
blessed that. Blessed like, loves that. God's a freak.
That's what I always, I'm like, okay, so God wants some guy to, this is gross, but like, God wants some guy to jizz in you just to create, to procreate, and that's what we're sanctioning, and that's what the church is telling us, and that's okay.
Like it, and that's it? That's all? Like, yeah, how like, that's, boring.
Yeah.
How limited? Like, life is so massive. Like, why has it got to be one way? What a boring God, if that were true, you know, which I don't think it is. Like, so unimaginative.
Yeah.
We figured it out more than God did. If that's the case, I have more knowledge than God because gay sex is better than straight sex.
100%. I was at a bar yesterday with a straight friend who had just gotten an IUD. Is that the right thing?
Oh, yeah.
IED.
An SUV.
The pregnancy stopper.
FBI.
And I was like, you know how great it is to fuck without worrying about this shit? Like, it already puts the sex, like, way higher.
Yeah, I had someone ask me very recently, are you on birth control? And I was like, no, I'm not on birth control. Why on God's green earth when I'm on birth control?
I am on a natural birth control.
Yeah, it's just, if God is real, they figured this part out.
Yeah.
And it's the best part.
I think that's really cool. And I like that you just, because you do live your life out loud, and it's just cool that you're like, I don't fucking care. I'm not worried about it. Thank I'm not you. Worried about these, like, labels or this coming out, but you know, it's also,
yeah, I just don't feel like I owe anybody anything. It's my damn life.
Well, then let me ask you this, because I know you're engaged.
I'm engaged.
I do know you're engaged, and I love y'all so much, and it gives me hope. Couples like you, and I think I've told you this in private, but I'll say it in public, give me hope that I will also find that, or that that exists in a way that I want. Like, I know plenty of married people. I know plenty of divorced people, plenty of people who've married a few times who, you know, are in these long-term relationships. And a lot of times I'm like, I don't really want that, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't see that as a partnership that, like, I desire. And then I see couples that, like, get each other and get it and are just, like, on the same page. And I'm like, that gives me hope. I need to hang on to that. I will ask, because you are someone who, like, doesn't seem into institutions. Like, why marriage?
It's a great question. I don't know. I think I've become such a romantic having a partner like Kristen. And I've dated a lot of people. Like, I'm kind of not a serial monogamist by any means, but I've always been in relationships here and there. And I've had, like, I've never lived anyone with anyone besides Kristen. So that's, like, how serious it's gotten. But it's so funny. Like, it's just a symbol, and it's, like, a very romantic symbol for me to be like, we're in it. We've already, like, made the promise to each other, which is why I feel good about the marriage. We've already made the promise to each other to work on things. Like, we've been fighting a lot this week, full disclosure. Like, you know, sometimes we have weeks where we just are both, we're both really busy. We own two businesses. So it just gets, sometimes we don't take care of each other because we're so busy working and taking care of other people, because that's literally what our jobs are. But I never feel at risk in my relationship because we've both committed to do the work. And until one of us says, hey, we can't do this work anymore, like, I know that I have someone who's willing to just stick it out with me. And, like, I already feel like I'm married to her in so many ways. I just want the, like, I want a symbolic, like, first of all, I want us to change our names and start our own family, which is really important to me, because whatever the family is that we create is not the family of our parents. And so that's a really important to me about the marriage in a literal way. Like, it's our own now. So I want to change our names, and I want it to be our family. You don't have to change your name to make your own family, but that's part of the thing that I want
to do. That's important to you.
Yeah. That, for me, I want to. I just like the idea of making our own unit. I come from a long line of party people. My family used to have a party rental company, and I just want to have a fucking blowout. I just want to have, like, the biggest party ever. That's one reason I want to get married. I'm unashamed of that. It's not why I want to get married, but boy, oh boy, is it exciting for me to plan a giant party.
No, that's like the cherry on top.
It's, oh my,
like,
God.
A big fucking party.
It's going to be the coolest party I've ever thrown in my life, and I'm, like, so amped to throw it.
And unlike my bat mitzvah and your sweet 16, the theme is you. You don't need another theme.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I'm just, so for a variety of reasons.
So I guess for me, like, the big sticking point for me with marriage is, like, getting the law involved.
Oh, yeah. And you're a lawyer, so it's funny to hear you say that.
I'm like, I don't want anything to do with that.
First of all, we're going to get prenups, which is, I don't know, I just thought that'd be funny to say, but people say get prenups.
Like, I keep my bike if this doesn't go well.
Like, we have nothing. We own nothing. We have businesses, so I guess it is kind of important for us to figure stuff out before we get married. Why bring the law into it? Great question.
Like, you can have a commitment ceremony. You can have, you're in New Orleans, you can have a party right now.
Right.
Like, well, you can do all the other things, so exchange rings and even have someone, right, you know, do all that, but, like, getting the marriage and going to City Hall or wherever,
maybe we won't,
these things. Yeah,
I don't know. I haven't really thought of it, but I think that there are certain incentives as business owners and like cohabitation purposes. Like, you know, we own things together. I don't know if that makes a difference. And also, we're going to buy a house together. It is easier in Louisiana. I know that. I have some friends just go through that process, and it was just way easier if they got married. But I don't know. I haven't really thought about that part. All I really care about is the party. Mm-hmm. The party. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just excited about the whole tradition of it all. Just, like, being in front of everyone that loves us and, like, telling everyone here, hey, we're spending our lives together. And, like, that just, I'm a little bit of a romantic about it. I never thought I would be either, because I was a kid that grew up saying I'd never get married.
Yeah, I mean, it changes when you meet, you know, like that. Yeah. And that's where, like, in my relationships, I always felt like and this is not to get gloomy.
Oh, get gloomy, baby.
But, you know, when it got towards the end, or even, you know, I would look at this person and I couldn't picture that piece of it. So with or without the law, because I always thought, like, yes, I'd like to be committed to somebody. I am generally a monogamist. I didn't care if it was the law or not the law. That part didn't make a difference. But, like, for me to think about, like, when I'm with this person, can I get up in front of everybody I know and this person and commit my life to
right
them?
Right, right.
Like, that's the piece that it is romantic.
I don't think you need it. Yeah, I don't think you need it. Not every relationship needs it. I mean, I want to have kids. Like, I want to have my own family unit, you know? So it's like, that part is really important to me. Maybe not the legal signing, but the marrying, the commitment part of it. The legal signing thing, yeah, you got me. I don't know. Maybe I won't do that part. No, we'll probably do it. But I have no attachment to the legal part of it.
Yeah, and if you do it for practicality, like my mom was single. My parents split up. My mom was single. And then she got hit with this tax bill. Mm-hmm. And then she told, because she had, my now stepdad, they had both been married before.
They didn't want to like get married.
Yeah, they're like, we don't fucking care. And then she was like, wait, I have to pay taxes? We're getting married.
Yeah. See, I want that. I want that sweet tax break. That sounds nice.
Yeah. And so it's like that, like the practicality part of it makes sense.
People, you don't think that one day you're going to meet somebody and you're going to be real in love with them, like in the pit of your heart. And if they want to get married, you're not going to want to do it for them.
Oh, I would do it for, yeah.
See, that was a quick change of tune.
I mean, if it was important to the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with.
Right.
But I'd still have questions.
Well, you know, it was more important to Kristen than it was to me. Because like I said, I grew up a little dirty punk kid that was never going to get married. But she very soon asked me to marry her and we started dating as like a bit, and then she would do it every once in a while when we were drunk, and it was very cute. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, like even up until she proposed, she'd be like, will you marry me? And like we just casually, when we're hanging out, and I would say no. I said no all the time. And then we finished a year of couples therapy and we were in a really good place, and she goes, you gonna marry me? And I was like, yeah, I'll marry you. And like a month later she proposed.
She waited. She knew it was worth it. And you had like a really cool proposal, right?
Oh my God, my proposal was so good. It was so gay. It was so good. I told that story at Queer Mountain.
Yeah.
I told that story and it was going way too long. And I was like, while I was on the stage, I was like, Amanda, how much time do I have left? And you were just like, go ahead. Yeah. You were like,
I was already letting you go. I was like, you know what? And the whole audience was into it.
Oh my God, I had them in the palm of my hand.
I worry, like running a show, one of my biggest concerns, obviously, is running the show smoothly, having people not say offensive things that upset people, but it's also like the flow of the show.
Yeah.
And most of the time, and not all of the time, but a lot of the time when people go over time, it's not good.
Right.
But every once in a while when someone goes over their time, it's great.
I sound like such an asshole because I'm like, I had them in the palm of my hand and I went over time. But it was like, yeah.
You felt the vibe.
I was telling the story of the engagement and the story wasn't done yet. And it was like, I didn't test telling it at all. But it went well. And also I had like probably like 15 people in the audience that night, and I think I was had a really biased crowd because they were all like, they hadn't heard the story yet.
Yeah, well, you couldn't be like build this whole thing up and then be like, and then she proposed the end.
Yeah,
like you we had to get the story out. But like I said, the audience was feeling, and I don't mind if people go over time if the audience is feeling it, but right. sometimes
I know I've been at shows like that where it's just like, get off the stage.
Yeah. And I'm like, how do you not feel the vibe that's coming from the entire audience?
Everyone feels the vibe except you. Yeah, that's real.
So that's what I get. That's why I like, I try to tell people up top when you do the show, I'm like really strict about the time, but I'm honestly not that strict, especially at Queer Mountain.
It's out now.
I know. Because it's a queer storytelling show and I don't want to cut off people's stories and experiences, but we also have to run a show and we want people to come back every month.
No, I mean, you got to produce a good show. You want to make it tight. I appreciate you letting me finish that story. I needed to tell that story. It was like kind of a come to Jesus for myself to realize like why I like was getting married a little bit. You know, like it was so romantic and it was nice to tell it, you know.
And we needed like a celebration, you know. This was like coming out of the COVID shit, like we just needed to feel fucking good.
I even walked out on stage and I was like, we heard a coming out story, we heard a da da da, does anyone want to hear a love story? And everyone was like, love, I want to hear about love.
Do you want to give a very, not a Queer Mountain version, but like a very brief, like,
oh just God, I don't know how to give a brief, but I'll try my best.
I mean, we don't have to do the whole build up.
I'll do a really short version. It was after Ida. We had a trip planned to LA. Everyone's like, didn't you see it coming? And I was like, no, because Ida was like the week before and we were almost canceled our trip because we were like, not the week, but like 3 weeks before, which is still, Ida was awful.
Well, Ida, I mean, we didn't have power for a week.
So we thought we were going to cancel and, we went and I had no idea she was going to propose. And apparently she had the ring the whole time and I didn't know. And my friend Dawn kept proposing. We were visiting my friend Dawn in LA. My friend Dawn kept proposing for us to do things like go on a sunrise hike. And I was like, I don't want to go on a sunrise hike. And then Kristen would be like, can we go get dinner in the hills? And I was like, it's going to be overpriced. I was like, and for what? We should just drive around and like look at the view from that. And then like, so she just like carried this ring in her pocket for days while I ditched every single idea that she proposed. And then one day we were driving to Anaheim to go to Disneyland and we had all these extra hours and Kristen really wanted to see the, she had said so many times on the before the trip that she wanted to see the ocean. And I tried to explain to her that like, there's no ocean in LA, but we had this rental car And I was like, oh my God, I can take Chris into the ocean. We'll come to find out. She wanted to go to the ocean so bad because she wanted to propose to me on the beach. Yeah. So we go to Long Beach, had a delicious breakfast. We walked to the beach afterwards and like Kristen touched the ocean for the first time. And then, yeah, she just out of nowhere got down on one knee. And I thought she was doing a bit because she always fake proposes. And it like literally we had just talked about marriage like the months before. Like it felt like a just conversation had just happened. So I didn't even believe it was happening. And she proposed and it was just, it completely surprised me because we didn't know we were going to be at the beach. We didn't know what the trip was like. Like, I didn't see it coming because of Ida, I think. But yeah, I'm so happy I was so surprised, like, because it was magical. And I've never had someone do something like that for me where I was just so completely taken aback in that way. And it was so romantic.
I like that she had the ring and had kind of a plan.
Yeah.
It was like the plan was adjustable because I feel like proposals go wrong so many times when they're like, it has to be this steakhouse at 7 p.m.
Yes.
And we have to sit at that table.
Yes.
And then they get real weird where they're like, no, we have to sit at that table. We have to do this. And it gets fucking weird.
Yep. Yep. And she knew that I'm real. I got a strong nose usually and I can usually pick up on stuff. So she knew that would never fly for me. And I also didn't think it was going to happen. It was because we went to Disney on that trip and I had told her years before, I was like, if we ever get engaged, please do not propose to me at Disney World. Like, we both love Disney, you know, we're Disney adults, but I was like, do not propose to me at Disney. Cause I don't want that to be the place that, you know, like I like it for its own reasons. Yeah. And I'm not that much of a Disney adult, you know? So I didn't even occur to me that it was going to happen.
You want Mickey and Minnie?
Yeah, no, it was like, so it didn't even occur to me.
And doing that like
it.
Fake applause.
And like holding their cheeks, yeah. And, like turning their head side to side.
That wasn't the image you had for your proposal.
Nope.
Thank you for talking with us. I wanted to end on a happy note.
Yay!
I knew that's where we would go. You're doing like so many cool things. So I would like you to tell everyone cool things, your business, if you want to promote it, your improv, any performances you have coming up, just anything in the pipelines that you want to share with the world.
First and foremost, my partner and I own a gym in Metairie called Vitality Community Fitness. It's a queer owned gym. It's our pride and joy. We're in year six, all female and queer. Trans trainers, like there's a blend, and it's a space that's free of diet culture. It's a really positive place to work out. We're always looking for members. That's our bread and butter, is that gym. We love it so much. We call it the gym for not gym people. And then I have a styling business where I style people in secondhand clothes. It's called Mary's Rack. You can follow me on Instagram. And I do comedy with a group called Live Girls. I don't know when our next show is. I perform with Big Couch a lot in town, improv. And I have podcasts too. It's called Planet Nola. It's me talking to people from New Orleans doing cool things. So listen to it too. It's good, I promise.
Yeah, and let everyone know where they can social media with you. And we'll also put it in our liner notes.
Yeah, social media with me on Mary's Rack or Vitality, please. I don't want to put my personal. I feel like I feel like I need to make a comedian page, but I won't. Live Girls, Mary's Rack, or Vitality would be... I just want people to come to our gym because I think it's the coolest place in the city.
Yeah, I need to. I see all the pictures. I mean, I follow y'all.
It's so fun.
I know you're the gym for not gym people, but I'm still at the, like, I'm going to follow you on social media stage.
Yes.
To, like, work my courage up to, like, go to the gym that's not for gym people.
Well, whenever you're ready, you know we'll hold you in our hands like a sweet newborn baby. Yeah.
I just started walking again in City Park, so I'm like just getting my mojo back for like wanting to work out, but it's hot as shit, so I'd really like to be inside.
No, our gym has no AC.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Kristen refuses to ever get it. She just
you have big fans?
We got big fans, and it's just real bro-y. It's bro-y, but in a gay way, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, the City Park doesn't have big fans, so that's true.
And we have a lot of shade. It's a beautiful gym because we've got a big pecan tree right out front. It's gorgeous.
Nice. Well, I will have to check it out sometime.
Come on down. Yeah. You get 3 free classes in a week.
Oh, okay. Look at you promoing. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing the podcast.
This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you asking me. You know, I love to talk about myself and you're such a good host. And thank you for everything you do in the city because I'm always continuously impressed by the communities that you make and keep. And we need more of you.
I'm a Gemini. I like to stay busy. that's our thing.
Hell yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you to Mary Jacobs for sharing her world with us. Special thank you to Ryan Golub for creating our theme music. Social media with us. Find us everywhere. We're on Twitter at Queer to My Heart. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Near Queer to My Heart. Find our merch at TeePublic, TeePublic. And we'll see y'all next time. Happy Pride. Thank y'all so much. Thank you. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.